You are listening to the Political. You are listening to the Political Periscope, a weekly podcast brought to you by Radio WNET. Interviews on international politics, security, geopolitics, economy, and more, every Thursday at 7 p.m.
Today's guest of the Political Periscope is Žygimantas Pavilionis, member of the Lithuanian Seimas, former Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs.
Political Periscope.
You're former Deputy Chief Negotiator of Lithuania in the process of joining the European Union in 2004. Is the EU that Lithuania, along with Poland and other Central European countries, joined in 2004, is it the same European Union as it is today?
Well, I would say maybe even much better, much stronger. Of course, we are not very much satisfied that our brothers in UK left us. But honestly, I am also one of the initiators of so-called United for Ukraine parliamentary platform, together with a lot of Polish MPs and senators. And we lobbied hard for candidate status for Ukraine. And I think at least we have a plan in Lithuania, not only to start accession talks with Ukraine next year, but to finish it during Lithuanian presidency in 27, and to make this dream of Ukrainian membership in EU happening in 29, when we will have elections of new European Parliament and appointment of new European Commission. So if we do it together with Poles and other brothers, that is, well, that is the dream that we had some time ago together in our Rzeczpospolita of two nations, you know, when we had this European Union of the Middle Ages, like Jean-Paul II was saying.
You said 6 years or 7 years from now, it's quite different from what France's Minister of European Union said. He said 20, maybe 10, maybe 20 years for Ukraine to join the EU.
Well, we know Ukrainian well as you. In Polish case, it took 4 years. In Lithuanian case, it took 3 years to negotiate. So we consider Ukraine like Poland. So if no obstacle, no artificial obstacles are created, they will be very much ready to do it.
And do you think that Germany or France wouldn't create the artificial obstacle? Are they mentally ready to accept Ukraine in European Union?
Well, I'm former diplomat for 23 years, and I know just instead of raising those rhetorical questions, you have to work very hard. So next Monday, I'm traveling to Kiev to celebrate the National Days with 30 members of Parliament from 15 countries, from Germany, from France, from Poland, Greens, Reds, and Christian Democrats and Liberals. You just have to work with them. You just have to show the atrocities Russians create on their territory. You just have to raise, is it human? And then, you know, when usually they are coming back on the train to Polish territory, they confess that they were wrong for 2 decades, and Lithuanians and Poles, they were always right. So it just takes an effort to lobby at parliamentary level, at governmental level, at think tank level, at journalist level. It's exactly what we did together with Poles, trying to get into the club, 20 years ago. So we know the road. We know how to fix this Soviet stupid machine and how to stop the barbarians. And let's do it together.
You've had a clash with European Commission on the subject of transport ban through Lithuania to Kaliningrad. Finally, Lithuania lifted the ban on the transport of Russian goods. What do you think about it?
Well, sometimes Lithuania is called like a freedom island. We are first on a lot of other freedom issues. We were first to destroy the Soviet Union, to revolt, inspired by Polish Solidarność movement. We were first to raise the flag of Belarusian freedom in European Union when we entered. Vilnius is a center of Russian dissident, the whole team of Navalny, Kasparov, and all other freedom fighters. Kasparov is doing a free Congress, free Russia Congress next week. Svetlana Tsikhanovskaya made her Congress last week in Vilnius. So, yes, we push to the limit commission to fight for freedom, but sometimes we fail. So, for example, now we have a debate to ban a Russian tourist visas, and we did it in the Baltics. We are even going further, so it would be good that, not only Baltics or Finns, and I heard today Danes, but whole Central Europeans and other nations, they follow our example, because why should we allow those Russians who say nothing against Putin, who take that, who share the moral responsibility for war in Ukraine, why do we allow them to shop in our malls? It's kind of stupid.
Germany would, happily allow them.
Well, we recently had German Christian Democrat leader Merz, who met my prime minister. We are from the same political family. And he said the same what all German leaders from different other parties are saying the whole year. Lithuanians, you were right. Let's start from Bucharest NATO summit, where together with late President Kaczynski, I was then deputy foreign minister, we've been lobbying for membership action plans for Ukraine and Georgia. If those leaders would listen to our then it was seven presidents, even President Bush was with us, nothing of this nightmare would happen. So it's time to learn the history lesson.
You've mentioned Kasparov, you've mentioned Russian opposition. What should happen in Russia internally after the war to make it not a danger for Europe?
Well, I would maybe reply a bit in a cynical form. The best cure in this case are weapons to Ukraine. Weapons, weapons, weapons. The more, the better. Already today, we have much bigger number of Russians killed on Ukrainian soil in 2-3 months or 4 months to compare with 10 years of their war in Afghanistan. I remember I was 20 when Soviet Union collapsed, and I remember big movement of mothers of dead soldiers in Afghanistan. It was part of the movement that destroyed the Soviet Union. So, again, weapons, weapons, weapons. We have to inflict such a damage to Russian stupid soldiers who are trying to kill our brothers and sisters that every family would wake up in Russia. Maybe then they will understand what kind of leader they have.
And Russia will collapse?
I think yes. And I think it will happen sooner than later. I remember when Soviet Union collapsed. No Western expert predicted it. The best Sovietologist in Columbia University in London, nobody predicted what happened in front of our eyes. I was standing in front of TV tower. I saw my friends killed in 91 from my own school. My school was the closest to the TV tower. I was standing in front of the parliament. I remember the moment when Russian troops stopped in front of us because they were afraid to kill more than they already killed at TV tower. So we know that those giants, they are very weak. If we are not afraid, if we fight till the end, and we are exactly doing this today.
Lithuania is not bordering Russia, but it is bordering Belarus. What do you think should happen with Belarus?
Well, we are bordering Kaliningrad region of Russia. And we've been always the hub of Belarusian freedom. We host Svetlana and her team here. We accepted more than 35,000 of Belarusians after revolution. For a small country, it's quite a number. But we understand that Lukashenko so much sold his soul and country to Russians just to keep his throne, that he will be removed only after Putin is removed. So that's why we welcome very much those Belarusians who are joining Kalinovsky battalion. Yes, they have to fight with Putin in Ukraine. They have to stop the regime that is actually now occupy a regime in Belarus. And we hope when Putin collapses, 10 millions of Europeans, they will simply go our way. And together with Anna Fotyga in last fourth Kalinowski conference in Brussels, we worked hard to make the European Parliament, the whole European Parliament, to issue a declaration that we recognize European vocation of Belarusian nation, not the government, of course. So I think we should fight for Belarusian membership in EU, though it might sound very romantic today, but a lot of things sounded romantic to compare with what already happened.
Of course, I meant mainland Russia, not Kaliningrad. Kaliningrad is another issue, so-called Suwalki gap. But how is it viewed from the Lithuanian point of view? Do you think Suwalki gap is this most vulnerable part of our territory, our European territory?
It is, until we have a different level of military presence in Lithuania to compare with Poland. Poland, really, we welcome so much your engagement with American troops. They have presence in Poland in quite a high numbers. And only now in Madrid NATO summit, we agreed with our leading nation, Germany. Germans lead the NATO presence to increase their presence from battalion to brigade. When still working with Americans to have a permanent presence of Americans in Lithuania. But honestly, with all that help of our friends of NATO, internally we concluded that the only way to survive in this circumstances is just to become, well, people they were calling Lithuania and Northern Israel or Northern Jerusalem, is just to arm ourselves like Israel does. Now we have already 2.5% for defense. Internally, we are thinking even about going up to 5. And we need air defenses, seeing what Russians do with their missiles, because they are incapable to fight a normal war. We don't have those air defenses. We have to work together with Poles and others, but in any case, we have to spend a lot of much more money in Lithuania, twice as we spend today for defense, if we want to survive in the future, and we will try to do it.
China is getting closer with Russia. They have joint maneuvers with other, also with other countries of Central Asia, such as Mongolia, and Lithuania, and now Latvia and Estonia are going further from China, as you've left this 17+1 format of cooperation with China.
Yes, and this is a little point of our heated discussion with our Polish friends, honestly. Today I congratulated the chairman of Ukrainian Verkhovna Rada, Foreign Affairs Committee, Alexander Mereshko, who also established Taiwanese caucus in Ukrainian parliament, first ever. We will travel together with him to Taiwan. And why? Because honestly, Taiwan introduced one of the biggest sanctions against Russia because we asked them. And this is about the chips. You don't have semiconductors in Russia. And this is a huge, it's like sanctions against that central bank freezing their accounts. Taiwanese stand with us. And that's why during my latest visit to Warsaw, when we had some conference about the legacy of John Paul II, and because I wrote a dissertation about that, I said something maybe too provocative in Polish context, but I said, you know what, I read all the books of John Paul II, and I'm telling to you, I think he will turn in his grave, seeing current Poland playing with communist Beijing, a game when the communist Beijing is sanctioning Lithuania with all possible economic sanctions. And honestly, we don't care because our economy grow very strong. You know, last year our growth was the strongest. And you know what? Americans are helping us to extend all possible economic relations with democratic world of Indo-Pacific. Our trade with Singapore grew up to 200%, with Korea 9%, South Korea 90%. We are getting first investments from Taiwanese, and we hope to reach the Czech level, where Taiwanese are one of the first job creators and investors in Czech Republic. So my question to Poles, you know, you are the nation who destroyed the communist. Why 30 years after you stand on the most powerful, atrocious communist regime, and you do not help us to kill that remaining enslaving format of China? Now it's already, okay, 14 plus one. We know that Czechs will follow us. We know that other nations will follow. But from Polish side, we hear that you are still thinking to have a meeting of this kind of pro-Chinese format in Poland. This is outrageous. Those are not Poles. Please wake up, stand on the side of democracy, and help us to create a united front against those communist autocratic regimes, because honestly, we are dying. You know, we are just 15 people on this map who are still democratic. So we have to stand with democracy. We have to stand with Speaker Pelosi. We are thinking about the visit of Speaker of this Parliament to Taiwan. We are searching for friends. We would appreciate greatly that, you know, Polish leader of Sejm or Senate joins my speaker, and let's start that fight, because this is about survival of us 50 or 100 years ahead.
Some people are in Poland are shouting economy, economy, economy. What about economy? What about the cooperation in Central Europe, Frisis initiative?
Well, this is kind of schizophrenia then, because when you accuse Germans or Schröder making business with Russians, but at the same time you make business with communists in China, this is a schizophrenia. Sorry, you have to be consistent. If you want to convince Germans, who are much more against China with us than Poland today, this is a very strange world, honestly.
And the Frisis initiative, this possibility of cooperation in Central Europe?
Well, this is okay if this is an initiative to get Chinese out of the regions and to get Americans in. But if this is an initiative to get Chinese in and then to turn into Little Hungary, that's a problem.
You've mentioned John Paul II. Today we have Pope Francis, and his attitude towards Ukraine is kind of controversial. How should he act?
Well, I was speaking with the Lithuanian Apostolic Nuncio in Kiev. We have the only one in Kiev. And yes, we would love Pope to be a moral leader of that fight, because on the other hand, seeing religious Russian leader Kirill, a KGB officer, blessing Russian soldiers before Christmas or during any religious holiday to kill Ukrainians, this is not a religion. I think Catholic Church have to stand not only for human dignity of Ukrainians, but for Christian values that are completely corrupted by Russian KGB and Russian Orthodox Church today. We have a lot of Orthodox priests in Lithuania who denounces that attitude of Kremlin. So I still hope that after some time, Pope Francis makes a visit to Ukraine. you know, unites the church, a Greek Catholic church that was actually created here in Lithuania during our Rzeczpospolita times, you know, all other faiths. And, you know, this is time for Christians to unite and build Europe whole and free. And I remember my last meeting with Apostolic Nuncio, Lithuanian Apostolic Nuncio, before the war, and we agreed together that this is, Ukraine is the biggest hope for Christian unity in Europe and maybe the world. If we win that fight, we unite Christians, and impact will be much deeper than Ukraine only. You know, Russians, you know, they are also Christians. They are suffering from this stupid KGB regime, and, you know, they will wake up after when we win that fight in Ukraine. And it is, isn't it the dream of all the popes in Rome to unite Christians in Europe? So if you do it, don't stand on KGB side. Stand on the side of freedom and Ukrainians.
And when will we win this war?
I think I have a strange feeling that this year. It might sound too romantic, but I just feel it. We will see.
This was the Political Periscope. The podcast is released every Thursday at 7 p.m.